Good morning. You are tuned to KBOO Portland, and it is just, 30 seconds before the top of the hour. That's 10 o'clock. Stay tuned now for Air Cascadia.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of We Can Listen, The Power of Being Heard. This is a monthly event series at the Old Church in Portland. This month, it takes place on Tuesday, June 13th at 7 p.m. This month's program will draw on stories created through Portland Story Theater's Urban Tellers series and will feature the real, true stories of immigrants and refugees now living in Portland. Storytellers include Zara Abukar from Somalia, Lily Ningsa from Indonesia, Eva Rodder Johnson from Venezuela, and more. Again, that's We Can Listen, Tuesday, June 13th at 7 p.m. at the Old Church, 1422 Southwest 11th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
My love, she speaks like silence, without ideals or violence. She doesn't have to say she's faithful, yet she's true, like ice, like fire. People carry roses, make promises.
Cascadia. Today is Monday, June 12th, 2017, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio, your sanctuary radio, your resistance radio, and your whistleblower radio at 90.7 FM on the air, KBOO.FM everywhere. Well, these are dark days for whistleblowers or potential whistleblowers. Instead, what we have is a massively leaking government, which is good in this case, because if it were not for the leaks, which simply by virtue of being a leak in the first place, get themselves on the air. what happened? We seem to have lost journalism somewhere in the mix. It's become as dangerous, perhaps, dare I say, to be a journalist these days in America, as it is to be a journalist in other countries around the world where there's conflict, there is repression, there is a lack of civil liberties or free speech. So journalism is responding to the political climate in the way that it might in another country, but nothing like this. It's difficult to respond to a situation if you have absolutely no experience or haven't been able to even imagine these conditions that prevail currently in America. America is virtually unrecognizable. I do want to remind listeners that we still are living under the Patriot Act. Remember, Patriot Act was supposed to go away, 600-page document, which pretty much no one who signed on, none of the signatories, read the whole thing. They signed on, nevertheless, knowing full well that it was a pastiche of pieces of laws, all of which would support martial law. It is not in and of itself martial law, but it contains fragments of other legislation that might be used to build the architecture of martial law. So we had in January we had a coup d'état and which made extraordinary crimes against our American Muslim population, made those crimes part of daily life. And now we live under the USA Patriot Act in conditions that are absolutely primed for martial law, which would make life almost unbearable, untenable for American Muslims. We have joining us today Corey Saleh, the director of the Department to Monitor and Combat Islamophobia with the Council on American Islamic Relations. Corey has been a guest on the show before, very generous with time and viewpoints. Good morning, Corey. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Good morning, and thank you for letting me come on and join you.
Well, we have now, of course, looking at various extraordinary acts of violence against American Muslims. And now today, of course, is the anniversary of the bombing at the Pulse nightclub, which 49 people were killed by someone who walked the world with so much hate in their heart that it virtually exploded. And we have across the country, everywhere, Missouri, everywhere, it's extraordinary degree of Islamophobia and a bizarre rational fear of Sharia law, which was celebrated on the weekend. Corey, please, can you talk a bit about the sources? Even given some of the words of this so-called president, results of coup d'etat, permission from this government for these people to act. What is it that are these people who always wanted to act out their hatred, or is the hatred a sudden phenomena, or how do you account for some of this extraordinary violence and Islamophobia sweeping the country?
Well, I want to make sure that we put any response in the proper context, and that is that I would argue that every minority has seen a rise in discrimination really since the presidential election cycle heated up. And certainly in the wake of the election, I know that here at CARE, our colleagues at the Southern Poverty Law Center, who track white supremacist activity, and other groups all saw, you know, a significant rise in acts of bias targeting minorities. And I mean, all of your listeners are familiar, unfortunately, with the things I'm talking about. So I think that, in part, the election itself was so contentious. There was definitely Donald Trump using language and imagery that was, I would say, designed to provoke on, to play on people's fears and provoke their anger, and conditioned that people to acceptance of mistreatment of minorities. So when you have Donald Trump saying things like Islam hates us, and that he gets a negative vibe from the Quran, and that he would ban Muslims from this country, that does create an atmosphere in the greater society where people might feel more comfortable to go out and act on their negative feelings toward a number of different minorities.
Well, what I think that, and let me try to make this a little clearer, I guess, clarify. People who are directing hatred towards minorities, yes, we have that in abundance in this country. But in the case of hatred against American Muslims, it seems that the hatred is directed against something that they know very, very little about. And what I'm baffled as to how is it possible to hate so violently something which they know very little about. You know, very little about the Quran. Some of the people who hate American Muslims so much know very little about Sharia law. They're protesting something they know nothing about. How do we account for this? And how do we, for that matter, combat it, or how do we confront it?
Well, I think what you got to there at the end there is the most important thing to me. And how do we combat and confront prejudice in our society? And it's not like prejudice is something new that we haven't seen in the past in this country. And I think one of the most important things people can do is to get involved in the movement that's pushing back against it. So it's fine to be at home and be concerned about it, but I would suggest people sign up for the lists of groups like CARE, who I work for, the Council on American Islamic Relations, the ACLU, Amnesty International, Southern Poverty Law Center, because that takes your concerns as an individual and groups you together with the movement that's pushing back against prejudice in this country. And I'll tell you, for us, you're absolutely right. Most people in this country are not familiar with Islam and its principles, and have been watching really unfortunate stuff on the media for years, because the media has this habit of focusing on the negative and not focusing on many good things that are being done. So what I have found is it's best to talk not specifically about Islam, but about things that Islam motivates its followers to do. So, for example, if you've eaten a Chobani yogurt lately, that's a Muslim-owned business, and that's an entrepreneur who's adding money to our society. If you've ever been to Chicago and seen the tower that used to be called the Sears Tower, that was designed by a Muslim. Muhammad Ali, Malcolm X, these are well-known Muslim figures in this country. Less well-known, Ibtihaj Muhammad, who won a medal for the United States at the last round of Olympics. These are all, there's many examples in Flint, Michigan, around the water crisis that everybody remembers. It was Muslim charities that were at the front lines of making sure people had clean water. These are people who are motivated by their faith to go out and do good works and to serve communities in which they live. I think so any starting point for a conversation against pushing back against prejudice should include facts like that.
Well, community service, certainly, and zakat, giving donations to people and organizations that will use them in ways that are most beneficial to communities. But what about, if I would I, in my own life, would suggest reading the Quran, reading the Torah, reading the Bible, and noting the similarities, because it all comes out of the same source, I have to say. We are out of time, down to our last few seconds. Any final thoughts you'd like to leave with our listeners today?
I would say, you're talking about this weekend, when you looked at hate rallies across the country, the important thing to see there is that most every one of those rallies was massively outnumbered by people who were there talking about American unity. So, thank you.
Again, thank you so much. My guest has been in Corey Saylor, the director of the Department of Monitor and Combat Islamophobia with the Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE. And that is so easy to find out more about. You just Google CAIR and bang, there it is. Fantastic website for if you want to follow along with what goes on in the American Muslim community, combat Islamophobia and prejudice against minorities across the country. This has been a Cascadia for Monday, June 12, 2017. That's the engineer for us today. Thanks so much. Derek Crooks is our AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stab. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
KVU Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the